Everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, doing something wild, unexpected, and I didn't think we ever would do here in the year 2024. What year is it? I don't know. 2024. That's right.
204.
24. So we started at zero. Now
this
we're here.
Is knowing is half the podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
It's like talking to my kid, like, 1,24,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, Yep.
And you are a prolific cruncher.
Yeah, no. I do thousands.
You do thousands of them. It's great.
I'm Robert Clark Chan.
I'm Gina Ippolito.
And we are having a good time today. It is a week. We are having fun. Who knows when this episode's coming out, but we're having fun with it. This is an episode of a TV show that Robert Clark Chan has personally said we will never do this on the show. I have suggested it. We have had it suggested in the past years ago. And this was one of the very few times in the history of the show that somebody put their foot down and said, I just flat out refuse to allow this on the show. And we respected their wishes until we asked for Patreon suggestions. This came up. It was suggested again. And I guess we caught him on a good day because Robert Clark Chan said, yes, I will do an episode of The Amazing Chan Clan.
It's a show named after Chan, as I understand it.
Yes, 100%. Many years before my birth, my coming was foretold, as it is written in the ancient scriptures of Hannaus Barbarus.
And they knew that you would become a hard-boiled detective, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah, 100%. Here's the thing. I am a kinder, softer person than I once was.
Are you? Interesting.
And, I mean, because here's the thing. When you look at the title of this thing, there is no way it's not going to be wildly racist. There's no way it is not going to be heaps and heaps of offensiveness, and to the point where me, who's pugnacious by nature and is willing to take on something like this, like, let's have some fun with this, I was like, no, we're gonna do this. I'm gonna be so pissed. I'm not gonna be the joke or do anything. I'm just gonna be fuming the entire episode.
And it's your new favorite show.
I finally got to the point where I'm like, I'm just, you know what? Let's just do it. It's going to be fine. And then I watched it and I was like, what was this? Was this anything? I don't remember. There was no plot. There was no character distinction between the 800 main characters in the show. That was nothing but just a watered over pastiche. It was a palette swap of the goddamn Partridge Family.
It was like if Scooby-Doo and Josie and the Pussycats had a dream and this was that dream. And I remember it about as well as I remember a dream 5 minutes after I wake up.
You mean like a Martin Luther King kind of dream? Like, I have a dream that like little yellow babies and more. Listen, little yellow babies.
Representation is important in 1976. When was this made?
Actually, something like that. Yeah, I didn't look either.
But I mean, here's the thing. Because it is basically just one of 100
1972.
Yeah, that's.
I'm
going
to be
right.
Honest. I was expecting it to be much more offensive.
Oh, yes, unquestionably.
Look,
for 1972, I was like, you know what? Did they realize that they're Asian? Other than
no.
The offensive music in the background, there was nothing Asian about them.
I mean,
zero.
From the get, the theme song wasn't, there was not a single dun 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 dun. There
right.
was no gongs.
Thank yeah.
There was no, you know, like a shakuhachi flutes. There was like.
It did feel like this could have been a crossover episode between Scooby-Doo and the Partridge Family. And it was just a leftover script. There was yeah. nothing in it that, yeah, I was just like, oh, okay. They took a template and they just said, what don't we have? And someone was like, I guess like an Asian family. And they were like, all right.
So somebody
owns this IP in our back catalog. Let's just do this.
Let's do it. So here's the deal. I actually did a little bit of research for this one. I know.
Wow.
Just look at Wikipedia now.
I did, but I was looking at it before too. So Charlie Chan is based. This whole cartoon show is loosely based on the character of Charlie Chan, who was and I didn't realize this before. He obviously is an Asian American police detective.
You didn't realize Charlie Chan was an Asian American before?
Well, I didn't realize that he was fully he was an American citizen based out of Honolulu, Hawaii. I did not know that.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, and he was actually created originally for representation's sake because. The Asian community was not being portrayed very well. They were always cast as villains, sort of like about 20 years ago, how every Muslim character for some reason was a bad guy. This is sort of how this was back in the 1920s. And there were some books. And so this is kind of a wild part of the story is that they started putting Charlie Chan, who was a popular character, into movies. At first, they cast him as with Asian actors in the 1920s, mind you. And he was a supporting character, and that he was just not getting over, as our wrestling fans would say. And then in 1931, they cast a Swedish actor to play him, and that blew up.
yep.
That blew up, and they made 15 Charlie Chan films with a guy named Warner Oland. He died. They cast an American named Sidney Toler and made 22 more Charlie Chan films.
Yep.
And so they have made a million. And the other thing about the character that really struck me and where this cartoon came from is the character of Charlie Chan has 14 children, a.k.a. the Chan clan.
I mean, if you're trying to build a clan, you need people for it. If you're trying to build a little army to do your detective work.
Yeah, he's the Philip Rivers of detectives. And that joke is for one of you, and you are laughing hysterically right now.
Know that reference? Don't care to know that reference.
Don't. Same. I assume it's something stupid. So,
Sesue Hayakawa was actually a huge movie star in I want to say the 20s, and in many ways, maybe part of the reason that the stereotype of Asian men became like. Sexless, weak, incompetent, bumbling kind of thing because he was so hot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And people were threatened.
Point where everyone was like, oh, we gotta nip this in the bud because he's got this dark foreign energy and like mysterious.
What's this dude's name? Let me look him up.
Sesue Hayakawa. S-E-S-S-U-E. So, Charlie Chan, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, I'd really have to like dig in to see like was he a positive influence? Was he, you know, just like the base of so many stereotypes? Is it kind of like Apu, where like nobody really meant anything by it, but it ended up being a huge problem for people of color.
All right,
yeah, I'd bang this dude.
This dude fucks. Yeah, there's no doubt.
Unquestionable.
I mean, in this very first photo, as he gets older, he's a little too old for my taste. But in this first photo.
I mean, eventually
this first photo, he's an 18-year-old comedy guy.
Ew.
No, dude is like nuts. He was like training super hard because he wanted to be in like the Japanese military. He got into like some sort of like. He was screwing around and like blew out popped his eardrum like the day before he went to get his physical, and so they rejected him. And wow. So dude like went into the backyard, took his dad's fucking samurai sword, stabbed himself 14 times in the stomach before you know, like the family got him and
the fuck,
you know, got him to the hospital and he got better and all that, but like just like dude is hard as hell.
That's crazy. Well,
And so like in the silent era, he was just like this dude that like women were just losing their minds over.
Yeah, it was so bad. They had to, literally Hollywood's answer to it was to wait a few years and put out, what is it, Long Duck Dong and 16 Candles?
Yeah. Just a few years.
A couple of years later. I mean, to be fair, looking at this right now, Sesue, you know, he was in Bridge of the River Kwai, 1957. And what year did 16 Candles come out? Was that like 61?
Yeah, right around then.
Right around then, right? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. John Hughes was at his peak, as we all know.
In the '60s, yeah.
In the mid '60s, yeah.
Yeah. You know, guys, we did it. We solved it. We cracked the case.
Writer than he did Pretty in Pink.
Yeah. We're basically Charlie Chan up in here.
Please don't say that ever again.
My first thought is this is going to be rough, isn't it? And my second thought is, okay, this looks exactly like Scooby-Doo. I mean, it's Hanna-Barbera, so of course it does.
They got
it.
And then
I said, is this just going to be Scooby-Doo with more racism? And it's actually Scooby-Doo with slightly less racism, but that's only because they whitewashed the entire family.
Yeah. The first time you hear Charlie Chan talk, you're like, I think maybe there's supposed to be an accent way, way, way in the back there.
Yeah.
But it's almost completely invisible. And the first beat of racism you get is the Middle Easterners who sound East German robots, I guess.
Yes, it's wild. This is straight out of Speed Racer, this racism. It's crazy. And they also have a magic car. I need to point that out too. They have a magic car that can like change into other cars magically. Not like a transformer. They just sort of press a button and it becomes like a garbage truck.
This is before a
mailman's or whatever.
Transformers were a thing, so it is a little jarring because, I mean, they have this panel of buttons. There's like 20 buttons on there, and they can do Chan Plan 1 through 20.
Chan Plan 1 through 20. That's so good.
And you see it in the opening credits, and I didn't realize it until I watched it afterwards. I was like, oh, okay, that's what they're doing there. And it turns into just like a whole bunch of different kinds of cars, which is kind of neat. I think it's late enough that it's sort of like, oh yeah, Japanese are really good at electronics, so they can, you know, turn their cars and all sorts of crazy stuff. Except that, yeah, like they didn't have any way to visualize that, so it's just a puff of smoke and then yes. Another vehicle.
Look, Hanna-Barbera ain't paying for no transforming animation. I'm gonna tell you that right now.
No, they missed the goddamn boat, is what they did.
But also, they're at a race. And they are celebrating a Muslim fellow named Prince Harim.
Yep,
and so there's, and I'm just like, boy, we are diving right into the potential problems because we have the entire Asian Chan clan and we have an entire group of like turban wearing Muslims together.
We don't know that they're Muslims. We know that they're Middle Eastern.
I mean, you're right. To be fair, I'm sort of making assumptions based on the fact that you could probably make assumptions about this. Maybe people didn't know what Muslims were in 1972, so maybe not. They're
probably still calling them Islamists. So, okay.
Yeah,
not a whole lot of cultural sensitivity there. But at the very least, they don't hit it hard because they're protagonists here.
Yeah, and maybe this is just the way that these shows have shaped the way I think. I assumed that the Asian family were the good guys and that the Middle Eastern family were going to be the bad guys because they were separated on different areas. They're both watching the race. They're talking about two different like rivals racing. And then it cuts to like, no, they're actually all on the side of Prince Harim.
Yeah.
And they're all together,
Prince
even though they
dream fabulous. He Ali Ababwa.
God bless America. And so even though they've self-segregated, they stop doing that at a certain point and they start hanging out together.
Yeah.
Anyway, Prince Harim, I don't know why he's here racing, to be honest with you. There seem to be no stakes on this race whatsoever.
Oh, it's totally a vanity race. I would buy that a prince would enter a vanity NASCAR race. Like, it's like someone who like knows very little about it and is just, has this very expensive car that they bought and a very expensive team that they pay. And it's like, okay, well, it's going to be, you know, it's like when Apollo Creed fights, you know, Dolph Lundgren, it's for show until someone dies.
Yeah. To be fair, though, I wouldn't consider this a NASCAR race. This is more of a cross country or an F1 kind of a.
It's a wacky racers race, is what.
Yeah, because they're driving all over the countryside and whatnot, and he has to be home tomorrow to sign important papers to the country, or bad things happen. I guess. I guess I ask the question: why didn't he just sign it before he left to go to the race? Was the printer broken? I don't understand the problem is.
No, these things need to be there. There's a pomp and circumstance to them. They had to get the notary.
Yeah.
He had to do it in front of important people.
In the middle of the wrestling ring.
I've seen enough WWE to know how this goes.
If someone gets powerbombed through the table. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to sign it, and then Kane shows up. And he gets powerbombed through the Spanish announcer's table.
That's the way it's supposed to happen.
So who's the bad guys here? This Frankenstein's monster that all of a sudden shows up?
Well, that's what's really weird. I'm still trying to figure out who the bad guy is. I watched this yesterday, but I just seem to remember that every time they set up somebody who we assume is a bad guy, it turns out, they're fine.
I suspect that the whole format of the show is that every episode, there's four different suspects, and then little groups of the family.
Yeah, you're
go
right.
Out. I don't know, but there's so goddamn many people. I figured it had to be something like that.
Oh yeah, you're right. But that is a very of the time Nancy Drew type of thing. Can you figure out who did it? Who's the person? Yeah, you're totally right.
Well, I guess we have to turn this entire show into the Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan podcast.
Nope.
Until all 16 episodes are done and we know every mystery.
Yeah.
No.
What if it's the greatest series ever made? What if there is an overall mystery arc that is Veronica Mars level of writing you're missing out?
They couldn't get a single episode in where they defeated expectations. They left little hints that suggested to me that it could in fact be Prince Harim's
his manservant or whoever he is,
or whatever, who was behind it all, but they didn't even bother. It just was here's this really shifty guy. Yeah, it's the shifty guy. They threw in a couple other red herring shifty guys, but
I respect it. I respect it that they were you're going to think it's someone else, but the biggest surprise is that it's not.
Although actually, now that I think about it, I don't even think Count Yagesh is his rival, who apparently is British. I don't know.
It's Count Yagesh, so he's a count, so he could be British, he could be Eastern European. This show plays hard and fast and loose with a race.
Here's
in many ways.
Here's Count Yagesh.
Most efficient. My felicitations, Prince Harim. This time the victory is yours.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah, given Hollywood 1972, that could be one of 57 different nationalities.
I'm honestly not mad that the white guy is the bad guy, except that when we get to the end, I believe what he said is the prince's enemies did this. And my first thought was, obviously it's Yagesh. But then I was wait a minute. They didn't say anybody. They didn't blame a single person. They were just somebody did it. Oh, well, show's over. And that enraged me.
Well, those libel lawsuits, slander, that's a big deal in 1972. You can't just be accusing people, Chan.
Indeed.
In this detective show. So there's a fake, the evil crew, whoever they might be, make a fake road into a barn, and they capture Prince Harim and replace him with a body double. And what I absolutely love about this is we as an audience know that that's not really Prince Harim. Prince Harim is racing against Count Yagesh, his bitter rival. What's wild about this, and now knowing that it is in fact Yagesh, we assume.
Well, okay, the dudes who are doing the thing, they're rolling out the fake road, have turbans, but they also have fezes. So the turban fez
could be anybody,
Middle Easterners, as opposed to just turban Middle Easterners like Prince Rahim? Prince Harissa?
oh, delicious.
Prince Chorizo.
Prince Chorizo.
No, what's wild about it is that we know this Prince Harim is a fake. Count Yagesh is his rival. And yet Prince Harim still wins the race. Is this the ultimate, like, a swerve? Because if I'm Count Yagesh, I'm winning the goddamn race at least.
It's a good thing that Twitter didn't exist when Prince Harim went missing, because the internet doesn't do well with missing royalty and making wild guesses.
My understanding is Twitter doesn't do many things well these days.
I don't know. Writer Twitter is still a freaking delight.
Is it? You don't have the white supremacists horking on every post?
No, I think writers have culled them.
Oh, you've ascended. That's great. That's great to hear. No, thank you. One other thing I wrote here. There are so many characters, and it is so sloppily animated. I have absolutely no idea where anyone is physically located at any given time.
This is this is animated in the exact same way every cartoon in 1972 was animated. You just forget this.
No, Gina, yes, but every cartoon in 1972 tends to focus on four or five characters, not 27 of them.
All right, Charlie Chan. Henry Chan.
I think what Stanley Ray Chan, is actually saying is Susan that Chan, those people Chan, all look the Dan same
Chan,
to him.
Tom Chan, Flip Chan, Nance Chan, Mimi Chan, Scooter Chan.
You're making this
up. I have a problem distinguishing these people, and I am literally a Chan. So I'm not.
Now wait a minute.
I'm gonna
hold
let,
on.
All I know is the chick up singing in the band is smoking hot.
Do you know who the most famous voice actor here in this show is?
I'm assuming it's this chick, far enough in the Wikipedia? Since I just brought her up.
No, I don't know. I didn't look at that part.
Wait, isn't, because when I looked it up, it said something about like everything was redubbed. So are we talking about in this redubbed
talking
version?
About the redub.
Okay.
The redub. And Chan.
Wait. Oh my God. Are you serious?
Jodie fucking Foster.
Wait, I was going to say Don Messick, because he's a very prolific voice actor playing Choo Choo the dog. And then I saw Jodie Foster is Anne Chan.
Foster.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Wow.
You know, Jodie Foster once shopped at my Warhammer store.
Wow. Wow. So was this her first role? Was the redub of
1972.
Anne Chan or whatever?
I mean, it's probably pretty early. This is before.
She would have been 10.
Yeah. Bugsy. Taxi Driver.
Bugsy Malone?
She would have been 10 years old.
Yeah, so pre her breakout roles.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, that? Yeah, this is a wild, wild cartoon.
Mm-hmm, that is insane. I know I missed that completely. Wow. Anyway,
this dummy gets kidnapped. And honestly, they roll out canvas painted like a road. Mm-hmm. They just make a turn in the road. They don't erase the other part of the road or make it look like he's racing. He's like, you know what? I think I'll turn left.
It's a good bit. People used to move roads all the time.
Yeah, there's no like you not no signs or cones or anything to direct him to turn. He just chooses to turn into this barn where he gets jumped and kidnapped.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, he deserves it.
That's
on
him.
He should not be leading any countries. I'm going to tell you that right now. No. Mm-hmm. He makes George W. Bush look like Winston Churchill. That's what he does. I had to jump for a sec to find a political figure that is well respected. It took me an extra second there.
Yeah, no, we could hear it.
That's fine. Anyway, I just wrote here, ooh, now we're going to mix in a little light misogyny. Or even not even that light. They really like to hammer on the point to poor little Anne Chan, Jodie Foster, that you can't do things you're not allowed to because you're a girl. And in 1972, I don't think women were allowed to have credit cards yet. So you know,
for rec culturally. 1968 was that benchmark.
Okay, I'll look it up while you vamp.
But it's pretty close. There is a then we just go into a song, and that's, you know, how you know that, like, it's just a friggin'
and the song is
not a banger.
What?
Not a banger.
You're crazy.
Guys, real quick before Chan plays the song, the Fair Credit Opportunity Act was passed in 1974, 2 years after this cartoon aired.
There you go. There you go.
You know. Who done it? Who done it? Who came and stole my heart away? Who done it? Who done it? Who made me feel this way? I'm looking through my magnifying glass.
Anyway,
it's you know what? You know what? That's a medium banger. That's
yeah.
a medium bang. That is Listen, absolutely a medium
again,
banger.
Again, for a no-budget 1972 cartoon, That is a banger.
No, yeah. It is 100% inoffensive in exactly the way that everything else is. It's just another show's song that, you know, I'm sure there was in some other Hanna-Barbera cartoon, there was a song called, like, Who Is It? Who Is It? Who Is It Who Took the Pie?
That doesn't mean it's not a banger.
It does, because it is boring.
I like it.
Do not want to dance to it.
It captures the era. It's got that little surf like riff. It's got a little drum riff. I'll take it.
Enjoy it then.
I mean, I was at this point, I was like, you know what? There's nothing to dislike about this cartoon.
There is also nothing to like about this cartoon.
Yeah.
Listen, of all the cartoons we've done, that's kind of the best we can hope for. Nothing to dislike and nothing alike. I would say that's better than a lot of stuff we've done.
And we talk about the 7-second stretch that is the animation of Charlie Chan and his two youngest grandkids clapping like those little one-eyed monkeys.
Can I say right now, Chan?
So long. It goes so long.
That moment affected me so absolutely much that I already pulled it.
Have you turned it into a GIF yet?
I don't know how to do that. That's now you're not talking my language. But I did absolutely take a screen grab of it to prepare for this moment. Because Charlie
Chan. This is just him on the couch.
That's it. And it keeps cutting back to them clapping, sort of clapping their hands over and over and over again, but never actually making contact between their hands.
Wait, is this the real song?
Now, this is what I need to hear. I have put in our chat a song called Who Done It from a group called Tavares. And I would love to hear a little bit on the show.
I just played a little bit of it. I don't think it's the same, but
I don't think it is, but awesome. It's not dissimilar, but it's a super banger. Can I just go ahead and say that out loud? Mm.
Oh, well, this is obviously an Inspector Gadget song.
It's disco, man.
Who done it? Who stole my baby? Who done it?
This, my friends, is what you call a banger.
That's a banger. That song is that. Honestly, I'm no cap, kids. That song's a super banger. I love this. Oh my god, I'm lighting up right now. Just I'm glad it's as awesome as I was hoping it would be. But that is
right. It's on a version of it called "Poo Done It," and that is gonna be a banger.
Honestly, I'm a little bit surprised that your name in the chat of this recording isn't Poo Done It, but you know what? It's fine.
Listen, I was dealing with a potential domestic disturbance. I can't be clever when there's so much stimuli around me.
We found Gina's creative kryptonite, ladies and gentlemen. We sure did. Who done it? That's a banger. Anyway, so one of the Chan clan, I couldn't tell you which one, realizes that, yes, realize Prince Harim isn't himself or something's going on, because he calls out to Prince Harim from like the other side of a crowd and Prince Harim doesn't respond to him. And he goes, something's going on here. He didn't respond to me shouting at him from across a room in a crowd.
I cannot relate to this dude at all, because if someone does that to me, I'm like, well, clearly I fucked up. I should never have mentioned it. I should never have made eye contact. I wish I had never met this person ever in my life. Yeah. I am a horrible person and I need to crawl into a hole and die. I'm leaving the party immediately. And this guy is like, oh, clearly he's an imposter. It couldn't have been that he would like blow me off.
Yeah, Chan, I found your new line, honestly. That's not race to Canis. Yeah, it's just wild. And the music video, who done it? I actually wrote here, Gina, since you're the superhero of old songs and I know nothing musically, as evidenced by our Kids Incorporated episode, is Who Done It a famous song? We've gone into it already and discovered that no, but also yes.
I just clipped out an animated GIF that you might think is Boomerang so that it like just goes on forever and ever and ever and ever. No, that's just how long it is in the goddamn cartoon. They just don't stop. It's the cheapest animation in the world, and I fucking hate it.
Yeah, Chad, hold. Oh, God. Oh, look at you. See, I can't do that. That's fantastic. And they don't make contact. It really bothers me that their hands don't make contact to do actual clapping. They stop just short, and it really upsets me. This is the ADHD talking right now. I have a real hard time looking at this. It's very upsetting. So
maybe you should have helped him figure out who done it.
Thank you. Who done it? Hanna-Barbera. Yeah, I'd troll here. This is
Chan. How'd you make this into a GIF so fast?
Yeah. I got skills, y'all.
Yeah, that's
Chan. Seems like you should be rich.
Don't I wish?
Chan, have you considered just failing up job after job after job? It's pretty fantastic if you can make it work for you.
Weirdly, I can't just walk into video game studios like some people on the podcast, just leave an animated GIF on the table and people go, oh, you like animated GIFs? I also like animated GIFs. Let's
what?
I don't even want to speculate on how much money you're making, but it's more than more than me, B, more than you should be making.
I mean, I'm sorry, but yes to both accounts. The only thing I will ask that is, have you tried, Chan? Might work.
I don't like football enough.
You do like football, though.
No, not really.
I mean, enough.
I mean.
Okay, look. This is wild. Oh, so-
also, this band, it is the Chan Clan band, so yes. Of course they're all involved. There's a guitar, there's a bass,
of course.
There's tambourines because there's a girl, so she can't actually play any instruments. You know,
can't do that.
Drums, a trumpet, a trombone, and a clarinet.
You know, classic
instrument for any band. Clarinet.
I'm just happy there's no gong in there, if I'm going to be honest with you.
You know what?
They could have gone places.
They could have. They could have. And they didn't. So they didn't. Good on them.
So respect, sort of. They want us to think that the prince has amnesia. This is a big plot point because, well, he doesn't seem to remember things. So he must have amnesia.
Hold on.
Maybe he's suffering from magnesia.
Excuse me. Yes. Magnesia.
That's a good bit for a kid's cartoon.
I hate that. Here's the deal. That's a classic bit. You're 100% correct.
If it were,
I hate that bit so much.
If it were a running gag, maybe. But
it's a running gag throughout characters. The show, the brilliantly written show that you refuse to watch.
Yeah. Chan, let's do 15 more of these and we'll see if it's a running bit. Although, granted, if it is, I don't know if I would attribute it to the proper character because I cannot tell who anybody is on this show. There are 14 children. You think I'm lying? There are 14 children.
To be fair to them, they did cut it down for the cartoon. There's only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, not including Choo Choo the dog.
I find this clapping GIF hypnotic. I'm going to be honest.
It's really, really upsetting. What's even more upsetting is the way me and Chan pronounce that word one way and Gina pronounces it the other, and no one has even mentioned it yet.
It's people. Old.
Somebody is at home is just getting it's, real
it's
big.
It's been
mad.
Argued to death.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not here to argue it. It doesn't matter. Say it the way you like to say it, and then who cares? But I do know that it's a thing that people still get really worked up about.
That's fine. I'm not going to stop saying it this way.
Neither am I. Look, it's fine. And neither will Gina. And you know what? Much like in politics, we can agree to disagree. Oh, God. Gina's going to January 6th us over this. This is not...
I'm sorry. Her down spread a bunch of lies and then poorly plan an assault on your house that leads me to prison for the next 20 years.
And well, then you sell gold shoes and a Bible.
Gina, you're going to encourage the guy who lives underneath you to invade our house.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff going on right now.
Oh boy, oh boy. This is the real drama of the episode.
They got her out of the apartment, but now the cops are making sure she didn't take any watches with her.
Watches. I don't get people that have expensive things in their house. Could I say this right now?
Is it primary occupation walking around in a trench coat and saying, "Hey, want to buy a watch?" Holding up to reveal dozens of watches in his trench.
I mean, he is legitimately nocturnal. Like last night he started playing whatever this thing was at 7 p.m.
Okay.
And at 7:30 this morning,
oh, I'm so
is
jealous.
When it stopped.
Oh, I'm so what a G. Oh,
so I don't know. I don't know what he does. I don't know if he's playing a game, but it sounds like sometimes it sounds like video game gunfire is what wakes me up. Other times it sounds like a drum machine set to the same beat over and over and over again.
So he plays a lot of different games. I like this guy.
Oh my God.
He's the kind of guy I would loan $10,000 to.
He's 100% making meth in there and using that noise to cover it up.
I mean, I literally, yeah, I would not be surprised at this point.
But this is, look, you talk about, this is a thing that really bothered me, and I never talked about it, but we were talking about getting insurance for our new house, right? This is a thing. And he's like, "How much would you like to insure your possessions for?" And I'm like, "I don't know, nothing." And he's like, "Well, no, like, surely you have expensive jewelry or watches." And I'm like, "No."
Yeah, that's like, what I said too. When they asked me, I said, "The only thing would be my laptop." And he goes, "Okay." And I was like, "I would just buy a new laptop."
Yeah. And he keeps prodding. He's like, "Well, surely you have some very."
Yeah. Cause they want you to pay them more, obviously.
I get it, but I'm just sitting here being like, I have nothing of value to anyone but me. If somebody steals my Captain Carrot action figure, I will be heartbroken. But then I will go get a new Captain Carrot action figure. What are we talking about? It's my prized possession now.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Turn out the lights and you're in night glow. Now make your final move to take the lead and win. Zero gravity cliffhangers. Now with night glow. New from Daiko.
It's time to start the Strawberry Land Bake Off in honor of my very new Sweet Sense Kitchen.
Okay, you can start cooking. Judge, I hope you like my apple pie.
I'd better turn up the strawberries.
Everything smells very delicious, like apples and strawberries. But the gingerbread wins.
Who made the gingerbread?
I did. Oh!
The Strawberry Shortcake Sweet Scents Kitchen comes with everything you see here. New from...
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
So, anyway, the Masked Racer. There's a Masked Racer. He has a note, and he throws it, and it's wrapped up in a scarf. And there's something at the bottom of the scarf, and it says, Osiris. But this is where they wrote, oh, okay, it's got to have been the Count. Count Yagesh. It's so obviously going to be him. And this is what I wrote. It can't be him, because if this was his plan, he would have won the race. So here we go. This is me just saying it again. Why didn't he win that race?
This is real weird. Like, it's a rolled up, what looks like a scroll. It's a rolled up thing. Turns out to be Prince Harim's scarf.
Yep.
Which they've pinned a note on. And then somehow, in real small letters at the bottom of the scarf, is written the word Osiris. And it's not clear who wrote it. It's not clear, was this intended to be... Did Prince Harim write it on there because he knew he was being taken to the Osiris? Did they take it off him after? Why would a kidnapper do something that stupid?
Why would they? Yeah. Why would they give clues to finding them halfway through the episode? That's a great question. At this point, the Chan clan breaks up into subgroups, Zoom rooms, if you will. And then they go off on their different notions of how to get it. So this is, and that comes to play later. And it is a wild point that I'm like, so did they write like a whole, did they write like five different scenarios of going about this clue? And then they just picked their favorite and we followed them until they just met up with everybody else. Cause every one of the plans worked.
Yes, they did. Because, and I had to go back after I finished watching this, I had to go back to find where it linked up. And it's not there. Like, each of them follow different people and do different things. And all of a sudden, they're all together. And there's no...
yes.
They're like, one's in a fucking warehouse. One's driving around somewhere and up in an Indian restaurant. Fucking... And then they're just there.
Yeah. And we lose Charlie Chan entirely. He just disappears and shows up with everybody else. And this happens later in the episode, but I got to mention it because they're just like, wow, you're all just here. And Charlie Chan goes like something to the effect of like, there are many paths to the same destination. And I'm like, that is not an answer.
Well, no, he did answer and it's fucking stupid, but we'll get to that, I guess.
Okay. We'll get there when we get there.
We got to talk about the first group follows Count Yagesh to a fancy hotel. They have a fog bubble, which is a smoke bomb, but they call it a fog bubble.
Yeah, they're trying to borrow the Prime Minister's attaché case for evidence. They are stealing the briefcase of the Prime Minister.
Well, maybe he's a suspect.
That's great. I don't think they have the authority, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. They are children.
If we had more children police, we wouldn't need more adult police.
Mm-hmm. Let's make all children cops. Cannot see any problem with that.
Yeah, if all children were cops, there'd be less shootings. I think.
Because everyone would be dead after an intense round of shootings.
That's right. Eventually it would hit zero for one reason. They make their dog make a police siren sound.
I had to look up. I it wasn't until I read the Wikipedia and saw that it said Choo Choo the dog that I knew for sure this was a dog and not, in fact, some sort of bizarre cat-dog hybrid.
Oh, could have been an alien.
This show really did take every ingredient of every show. Like, they were like, it's got to have a band, just like the animated Partridge Family and Josie and the Pussycats. It's got to have a dog, just like every show, except this dog isn't voiced by Frank Welker.
Yeah.
You got Don Messick.
The 70s Frank Welker.
Yeah, you got the other one, basically. You know, you didn't hire Troy Baker, you hired Nolan North. That's, you know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. And he makes a police siren sound, so immediately the guards are like, cops are here, run! And then they just bail. So they use the fog bubble, they swap the case, and they discover nothing of interest.
Also, if somebody could tell me if that is a cat or a dog, because that looks like a friggin' cat.
That, yes? That does look like a cat. Is that Choo Choo the dog?
That is Choo Choo the air quotes dog.
It looks like some sort of creature. It doesn't look like either a cat or a dog. Although I guess the ears are definitively more cat.
It looks like one of Heathcliff's suckers in a Heathcliff cartoon.
It looks like whatever it is has just been burned. It looks like a lion that's been burned. I'm going to be honest. It looks like it had a mane and a tail, and both of them have been charred.
They've been set ablaze by Dennis the Menace. And now, that is a sad looking creature.
The cat dog makes a noise, and when it does it, that's a fucking cat. Its mouth is open like a cat yowling. That is a goddamn cat. Why are we calling it a dog? Why are we even pretending?
Sam brought the receipts, y'all.
I am more furious about this than almost anything else in this episode.
Oh my God.
I mean, maybe they bred it special so that it would look like a cat, but it has the insides of a dog.
I wonder if someone told them about Pekingese dogs and they're like, yeah, sure, that's what one looks like, right? Because there are, like, vaguely shape-wise, they're kind of on point, if that's the case. Color-wise, head-wise, everything else, incorrect, but...
Yeah. So let's just cut away from these folks. We're cutting back to other kids, and one of them was wearing two pairs of sunglasses and didn't know. It was just weird. I don't know why I wrote that down.
It's another one of those things where, like, they're trying to establish each of the characters as their own thing, but they only give them one thing in this entire episode, and it doesn't make sense because it's to have a pattern, you need three. You set up, you need the confirmation, and then the turn. And if there's just one thing, you're like, it's like a priest, a rabbi, and a nun walk into a bar.
Moving on.
Moving on.
Yes, exactly. it's bizarre. Yeah, the bits aren't funny. The bits don't make sense. If they were in conjunction, it's just head scratching. That's all these bits are.
I will say this. The conceit of the car is dumb, but I would have been into it as a kid. They turn the van into Chan Plan 8, which is supposed to be a dune buggy. He presses the wrong button. And they get a moon buggy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
It's a moon rover, which is something that would have been in the zeitgeist because, we was landing on the moon around that time. So that's not that bad a bit. I don't hate it. There you go. This is the peak. This is the episode peak.
We found the top, everybody.
Dune buggy, not moon buggy.
And they found the canvas road that was somehow, left behind on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
They tail count Yagesh to try to find the prince. And I just wrote here that this animation is not very good. I don't know what sparked me to say that, but I saw something in here that specifically, of all the bad animation that I've been watching up to this point, really took me out of it. So there you go. Go ahead.
They were following Count Yagesh. They cut to the other kids who are following the dude with the scar and squirrely eyes, and they're in like some like dilapidated warehouse. They meet a driver. He's got a helmet and goggles on, so like maybe he's a race car driver.
But he's supposed to be like a nameless goon, right?
For who? Because the other nameless goons involved are the ones with turbans and fezes.
But some of them are also like Frankenstein's monster.
We haven't gotten to that yet, but that is completely unexplained. I thought there was going to be more there. Nope, it's just a Frankenstein walking around scaring kids.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They broke into a warehouse where they just happened to accidentally run into a zombie race car driver who chases them around and leads to nothing.
It's not even the scary dude with the scar that they were tailing in the first place.
Yeah. It is what it is.
I'm losing the thread here.
Just now, because like 40 seconds into this thing, you could say I'm losing the thread, and you are correct.
So let's cut back to Chan Plan 11. Better disguise this time. Dolly's diaper service, the car turns into. They say, don't lose Count Yagesh in this van. But, like, they're in a van.
But, I mean, like, a high-tech van.
Sure.
Also, we're intercutting with the kids, and then we get a chase montage of the goon chasing the four kids throughout this warehouse, and they're all splitting up and getting in hijinks and over music, and it's
very nonsensical.
It is trying.
And it ends with them going... Unless I'm mistaken, they lose track of the guy and end up in a haunted house. He goes left, they go right. The two bros end up in a haunted house where they see an obvious coat rack with a long coat and a hat on top, and they go, "That's him, get him!" And they tackle it and spin around it about 9 times.
Far too long,
and no part of it looked like an actual human being. And then they eventually get scared out of the house by the shadow of a dog.
No, it looks like a puma. It looks like a great cat of some kind.
It looks like a puma.
Obviously does not exist in this part of the world, wherever they are.
But it's a little house cat.
House cat.
And they jump into a dumbwaiter elevator. And yes, this is where I wrote the comment. This is absolute shite. They end up taking the dumbwaiter down to the restaurant floor below.
Hold on.
Yes.
This is, if the dumbwaiter leads exactly where you would expect.
Ah, it's the young Chans. What brings you to Rama's old Indian restaurant?
What?
This is the bottom of a haunted house on a cliffside. They go down the dumbwaiter into Rama's Indian restaurant.
Wait, are you telling me that you wouldn't go to an Indian restaurant in the basement of a haunted house? Because that sounds like something I want to do.
That's fine. Except why does he know who the young Chans are? Why does he expect them coming out of the dumbwaiter?
They're famous and they're constantly popping out of places.
Why is he reading the newspaper? does he work there? Is he eating there? What?
Also, the table in front of him is completely empty.
Well, there's slow service here at this place.
Oh my God. What is this? I'm just sitting back like, what is happening right now? So.
And then immediately. We cut to four of the kids in a lifeboat. How did they get to this lifeboat? No mention. There are four more kids there's team one, there's team three. Team three are in the cabin of this boat, you know, where the steering wheel is and everything like that. And they're talking to more of the kids who are in the goddamn engineering room. And then they tackle another person in the shadows who turns out to be another one of the goddamn Chans.
Yes.
How did this many fucking Chans make it to this fucking boat with no explanation that happens to be a boat called the Osiris?
This is the cartoon equivalent of the video game Night Trap, where you just have 16 security cameras you're flipping between in hopes you could see something happening in real time. And... yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. It's just, we're just checking in on people and they're just on an adventure without us. And we're just checking in for a minute. And then it is insanity. And yeah, they throw Alan into a locker. There's monsters there. I had a question. Are we in a boat or are we in a mall? Because I cannot tell from the set dressing and the backgrounds what's even happening at this point. I said, look. This is where I wrote, guys, I have to admit it, I'm confused. But is it my fault this time?
I am horrified that not only was I forced to defend Rey Stekanus against a charge of racism towards Asians, but I must also defend your confusion.
Oh, God.
This cartoon did not make a lick of goddamn sense. It was just a bunch of tropes all mashed together, and just we were to assume these things happen because it happens in every cartoon, but there's no linking logic anywhere.
Yeah, it's I got lost. I just started, like, literally I'm looking at my notes right here, and I watched this yesterday, so it's not fresh in my mind, but I'm looking at my notes and I got so confused. I just started writing down just what I was seeing in hopes it would make sense later. And it looks like I'm having a goddamn fever dream right here.
I mean, to be fair, when things make sense, you don't understand them. So yes,
that is very true.
Well, that's why I wrote, am I dumb or is this?
I do need to clarify that in, under ordinary circumstances, you are the problem.
Okay, great. Okay. I think any long-term listener of the show already understands that conceit, Chan. You don't got to spell it out for them. This isn't the top of the show.
I cannot believe that I came into this thing thinking that I would hate it because it would be offensive and racist, and being even more offended at the poor quality of the scripts.
Yeah, so you're saying you want it to be racist.
I wish it were racist. Oh my God, I wish it were. There would be something to hang my hat on. God. Instead of just, this is poorly made.
So
I didn't mind it.
And this is, when we cut back to, you know, the rule of threes, famously, just do it twice.
Yep.
AKA the Chan Clan. A TV show. We do the police noises again. I don't know how this works. I don't know how this keeps working. The guards, a second time in this episode, run away. So they find the prince on deck C.
Also, you skipped over the part where the monster showed up.
The monster did show up, yes.
There's no point where they, like, take off the mask and go, oh, it's just some security guards.
No.
Or, like, oh, it was a haunted house and they were trying to scare people away. And so they're just dudes in masks. For no fucking reason.
Yeah. This is, it's like if AI looked at Scooby-Doo and wrote its own episode.
This is that fucking Willy Wonka in Scotland thing.
Yes.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, it has a banger of a song, and Willy Wonka didn't have that.
That is not a banger. We definitively proved that there is.
It's a 1972 kids cartoon banger.
Gina, I will find you six songs called Who Done It that are more banging than that track there.
And that might be accurate, but for its time, I'm sorry, medium banger. That's a medium banger. Who done it? Who done it? I mean, this is good. Look, this is when Charlie Chan just shows up in the prince's room where they found him, and he says, like, oh, many roads lead to the same location or something. And I'm just like, no, that's not how anything works, Charlie Chan. You're better than this.
Nah, what no, it's
not. How did you get here? They don't explain any of it. We never followed him.
He does. He does. Give me just a sec here. Okay, the dog and then the show up, and here comes Charlie Chan. Let's see.
There are many roads to the same place. I came by way of Osiris.
Osiris! That's what was on the prince's scarf!
And it is also the name of this ship.
Okay, sure.
The name of the goddamn ship is the Osiris. Dude reads that and is like, well, clearly he's on this boat, the Osiris. I'm not going to tell my idiot kids. I'm just going to walk there and let them, I don't know, risk their lives for nothing.
Yeah.
How many times do these people almost die?
And a lot. And to what you said earlier, why did the bad guy do that? Why did he?
I assume it was Prince Harim who, like, wrote it on there.
Sure.
Thinking that the dumb kidnappers, who clearly are as dumb as he thought they were, would give the scarf to somebody as a rent.
Why would they do that? I just, it doesn't. Guys, I'm starting to think this mystery isn't holding up.
Well, hey, maybe the other 15 episodes will.
Oh, you know what? Well, let's alternate between episodes of Sigma Six, Masters of the Universe Revelation, and Changeling.
And go fuck yourself twice.
God damn it. Okay. The prince is actually somebody named Zangwill, who I don't remember.
No, he's a master of disguise. A master of disguise.
He's Frankenstein.
He's pretending to be the prince. And I just wrote here, like, I was so frustrated at this point, and I'm just like, I just wrote here in all caps, got him! Because it gave me closure.
Oh my God.
Because I have no idea how we got here. I have no idea what's happening, who these people are. There are far too many goddamn characters. I don't know where anybody is at any given time. And I just want it to be over. How is this a bigger punishment for me than Chan?
Here's the thing. I watched it and I was like, there's nothing to this. When there was some stuff missing, I was like, okay, I got to go back and check. Turns out it was just not there. The information, I didn't like blank out and, you know,
You watch this more than once?
And then going through it now and I'm seeing clips of it and stuff, I'm like, wait a minute. This is just a fucking hot mess of garbage. Nothing.
Well, no wonder you've watched it 10 times. Yeah. Maybe that's what my downstairs neighbor has on a loop.
Oh my God.
You would not be here. You would already be insane. You know, clinically insane. They would have to lock you up somewhere so you would not hurt yourself.
I'm getting there. Whatever he is playing, I'm getting there.
And we have to talk about the end.
Okay. Because
everything's fine. Everybody's okay.
Yes.
They're getting into Prince Harim's race car and driving around. Oh, this is so cool.
Mm-hmm.
The girl isn't Jody allowed Foster. To drive, which, you know, fine. Like maybe she's too young. I don't know how old these people are. I assume that the kid driving is older than she is. And so she's just, you know, not ready yet. But like,
but Jen, can you just play the clip for us? I think that you describing it can't do justice to the gut punch that it was in the moment.
Charlie Chan is there.
He's there.
The young daughter or granddaughter, whatever it is. She's carrying I want to say it's a Merlin, possibly a hawk, some form of raptor bird. Who is their friend called Saladin. For reasons unbeknownst to us.
Just showed up now for the first time, as far as I could tell.
No. He helped catch.
Thank God.
Zangwill at the end there. So he did show up like 2 minutes earlier, but
God bless it.
One of their friends, they got Choo Choo the dog and Saladin the fucking bird of prey. Sure. And Charlie Chan is explaining to her why she's not allowed to drive. And I just want you to sit in this because this is all real time.
Thank you.
And just imagine that when there are no words, there's just a static shot of a person just staring.
And?
You let Alan do it because he's a boy. I can do anything a boy can do. It's a plot. I bet he's a boy bird.
The girl is laughing as well because the joke is that the bird is disagreeing and saying that she can't do everything that a boy can do.
Yeah.
He took a real long time to do it. So there's no reason to assume that what he was screeching at, probably some fucking squirrel running by, had anything to do with what she was saying. But it's a plot. I bet he's a boy bird.
I mean, you can't really argue with it. With that joke structure, that is. You love it so much that it's causing you physical pain?
On so many levels, I detest this.
You started out by saying it was fine.
I didn't say it was fine. I said that there was, I had expected so much worse.
And well, then you what should I consider got was, a win.
Was worse on a completely different level, in a completely different realm.
Listen, you're never happy. Do you want terrible racism or do you want cartoons that make no sense and are kind of boring? You have to pick you know one, Chan. It's 2024. You
know, looking for a third choice here. I'm gonna wait on that third choice.
Chan, I got bad news. That third choice is G.I. Joe Sigma 6.
Fuck.
That's, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for your loss.
Oh, I my bet God. G.I. Joe Sigma 6 is a boy bird.
Doesn't
make much fucking sense, does it? Doesn't make sense.
Makes sense
we're
to me.
End the fucking episode with it.
Yeah, listen, that is Charlie Chan and the Amazing Chan Clan.
Yeah, you can't even remember the name.
I want to forget we did this. I want this to be the lost episode, and I'm hoping that this will be our most forgettable episode because nothing stuck with me. Like, I'll be honest, again, normally I try to watch the show day of so it's fresh in my mind. Because of our scheduling and everything else going on, I had to watch it last night and take my notes then. And I retained so little of what I watched that I'm not, yeah, I said it already, but I'm looking at my notes being like, I don't remember. This doesn't make any sense to me. Glad to hear it's because the show itself was in fact nonsensical. I was starting to get concerned that the gimmick had gone too far.
I wish that I had watched it yesterday and just forgotten about it, like I should have. But I was forced to actually examine the pieces tonight, and it does not hold up to anything. By no measure of quality can you judge this thing and say that there's anything even moderately competent about it.
The thing is, though, despite you saying that, I don't consider this to be in like the bottom 10 of cartoon shows that we watched just because I can't make sense of it. Like, did it do things particularly badly? Yes. Did it make no sense? Yes. Are there way too many goddamn characters and multiple of their pets to remember? Yes. But more like it's like Foofer. I'm just going to forget it. I'm not going to remember it the same way I remember Rubik the Amazing Cube, right? Like that is the
only thing I remember about
Chan
Rubik player. Is that he was a pedophile, but I agree. I see way. This to me wasn't bad. I just won't remember it.
I am infuriated with it for reasons I can't even honestly comprehend. It's just the one thing that I can say is that I appreciate what they've done for representation because
sure.
One of the things that I've always said is like, I don't necessarily need, you know, like a whole bunch of, you know, Chinese people to win Oscars necessarily. I want a bunch of Chinese people to be able to make mediocre films, just a sort of forgettable trash that white people are able to make and continue with their careers.
So you love this is what you're saying. You love this. It does exactly this.
It does because it just is just every other Hanna-Barbera cartoon except with Asians in it. So like that is a kind of representation. But also, I mean, maybe I'm mad at it because I'm realizing that what I secretly hope for is actually terrible and an abomination. And I don't want what I want. And I hate the world again.
Look at what you have wrought.
Thanks, Charlie Chan. You nailed it.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So, guys, thank you so much for whoever it was. I don't have it in front of me. I'm so sorry. Whoever suggested this monstrosity to us. We've done it, everybody. We did an episode of the Amazing Chan Clan. We convinced Chan to do it, and it went in directions, I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting. And I think that makes this episode a win just by itself. In the meantime, you can, of course, find us facebook.com/knowingushalfthepodcast, patreon.com/knowingushalfthepodcast. You got a bonus episode on Patreon, Saturday Supercade with Delvin Cox. And me and Chan, sorry, Gina, you weren't there. And that's, you know what, I think you're better for it, to be quite honest with you. But that's part two of that episode is right there. You can listen to it right on our Patreon. And anybody who's a patron can do that. So, you know, we appreciate you guys very much. Keep sending us suggestions. We're starting to fill out the rest of the month with some Sigma Six, with some audience suggestions. And we're going to try to do some more stuff like that. And, you know, just we appreciate you being there. Thank you for that. You know, yeah, thanks for that. In the meantime, no one, I guarantee you, has anything that they want to add to this. So I'm just going to leave you with this thought. Fail upwards. It's the best. Good night, everybody.
No one gets that.
It's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win. On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.